We welcome you to another hour of Get Up here on ESPN in Bristol. I'm Mike Greenberg. We're delighted that you've gotten up with us today, and particularly to the medical professionals, the first responders, and everyone else working so hard to keep us safe and healthy. Our job is to keep you entertained, and let's do it starting right now. It is time to get up with the NFL draft. They held a dress rehearsal yesterday. One very important reality seemed to come from it. Could change a lot. We'll explain right off the top. Then, Tua, is he falling fast? Feels like the trend. And if he does, he won't be at all alone. You'll see what we mean coming up. And then, is this quarterback about to be the biggest surprise of the 2020 draft? How high for Herbert? That's the question. We've got the answer as we get up with you starting right now. And as always, it starts with get up and go on a busy morning in the sports world. This is important. The Korean baseball organization will begin regular season play on May 5th. That's more than 5 weeks after the season was supposed to start. Games will initially be played without fans. Sunday, South Korea reported just 8 new cases of the coronavirus. Again, we keep a close eye on this as it might give us a window into what will happen when sports return here. Elsewhere, Marlins CEO Derek Jeter is indefinitely foregoing his $5 million salary during the pandemic. Other executives have agreed to take pay cuts. The Marlins baseball operations staff will continue to receive their full salaries at least through May 31st. And the NFL held a mock draft yesterday so coaches and executives could get practice with the virtual format. There were some technical issues right away with a 2.5-minute delay before the Bengals could make the first pick. Here's Broncos general manager John Elway on how things went from there.
Yeah, the draft went smooth. It got off to a little bit of a hiccup when we first started, but other than that, it went really smooth. Everything was kind of predetermined, and so it made it a little easier than I think it's going to be. Obviously, the time constraints, being virtual and not having everybody in the same room makes it more difficult. So, you know, that may lead to less trades. You know, if anything, there's less chatter that makes things less confusing. Because obviously, as everybody knows, there's always a lot of smoke screens out there at this time of year. And so if anything, it may have eliminated some of those smoke screens.
Okay, buried within that, the most interesting and important part might be less trades. I think that's something that is worth keeping a close eye on. And here's the one and only Mel Kiper Jr. So, Mel, let's start with that. We know that at 3, the Lions, and at 4, the Giants have spoken openly about being open for business to try and move back. If that seems less likely now, and I don't hear the chatter going there right now, do your top 4 picks in this draft remain the same as they were in your most recent mock?
Yeah, and I think they'd be for sale, green, but you need a buyer, and that's the issue. I think they would have hoped that the Chargers or the Dolphins would have wanted to move up to guarantee they get that franchise quarterback, the guy they want. That doesn't seem like it's happening because the Giants wouldn't have lost anything going from 4 to 6. They would have still got the player and picked up a draft choice. So if you say you're stuck at 3 and they're the Lions, I still think Jeff Okuda, cornerback Ohio State, is in play there. He has to be. People say, well, they let Darius Slay go. Why would you want to? You got to replace him with somebody, Greeny. It's about covering receivers. You can't let a guy go and not have anybody. If they think Slay was good, that Okuda can be Stephon Gilmore, then you take him. Then the Giants, they have a Daniel Jones franchise quarterback, right? You need an offensive tackle. Is it a little too high, or do you take the best player, Isaiah Simmons, a linebacker? That's the debate. They've already decided. They know what they're doing. Are they going to take Tristan Wirfs, Iowa tackle, Jedrick Wills, Alabama tackle, or Simmons? They know that. Now, if you get to the Miami and the Chargers, that's a different ballgame entirely. I believe this, Greeny. You got to know who your quarterback is. You got to know it. They already know this. There's no debate going on there. As Adam Schefter said, do you get cute with quarterbacks? You can't get cute with quarterbacks. People said the Giants like Daniel Jones. Well, they took Daniel Jones. They didn't wait till 17. So you got to take the guy if you believe in him. And if Miami believes in a quarterback, you take him at 5. The Chargers believe in a quarterback, you take him at 6. If you want to get cute, like Adam said, you're Miami, you wait till 18, and you see who falls in your lap. But there's no guarantee anybody's falling in your lap if you wait till 18. So it's going to be really interesting at 5 and 6 to see what Miami and the Chargers do with this quarterback situation.
In your mind, as one who's been evaluating these guys for generations, is there a justification for taking Herbert over Tua beyond the injury concerns? Would there be any other justification?
I asked two personnel people, GM and a personnel guy, what would you do if you were in that spot? And this team obviously doesn't need a quarterback. These teams don't. They would take Herbert. It's because of the injury to Tua. But that's not Miami. That's not the chart. We don't know what they're going to do, Greeny. You don't let anything known. And John Elway said smoke screens. I don't believe any of this stuff. I've been doing it 42 years, Greeny. We thought Aaron Rodgers was going number 1 3 weeks before the draft. He didn't go number 1. He went in the 20s, 24. I remember Boomer Esiason dropping into the second round. I thought he was going to go in the top group. Okay. Cincinnati had three first round picks, never took him, took him in the second round. So you got to be prepared for everything. Chad Pennington, I thought, was going top 10. He went 18 with to the Jets after they had taken two players and took him because they figured we had to take him. We didn't expect him to be here. So I think that's the fascination of the draft. That's why not knowing right now exactly what Miami or the Chargers are doing. I'll say this, Greeny, if you are Miami and the Chargers, you're only there at 5 and 6, not having to move up with the Lions or the Giants because of the injury status of Tua and Herbert being a guy there's mixed opinion on. So those two teams don't have to give up draft capital. These guys are going to fall right in their lap. If they pass on these two quarterbacks who fell in their lap without having to give up anything, that would be pretty amazing considering how important that position is.
Okay, so if they do go off the board at 5 and 6, which I think is the expectation, and Shefty told us earlier this morning he doesn't think Tua falls past 10, that leaves Jordan Love. And Laura did a fascinating essay on him in our first hour, sort of a Jekyll and Hyde. Some teams love him. Some teams don't think he's a first-round talent. What do you think of him, and where's your best guess that he winds up?
Laura's right about that. I talked to a couple teams that had second-round grades. That's fact. Second-round grades on Jordan Love. Now, I haven't heard anybody say first. I know Todd's really high. Todd McShay is on Jordan Love, and what he's hearing is high first. So you got to figure that with Jordan Love's arm talent, he probably goes in the first. If you're talking about Jalen Hurts in the late first, you got to think Jordan Love in the first with that kind of arm talent and how he played 2 years ago when he had help. Problem is, Greeny, it's no man's land because you can't justify putting a player with a team who doesn't need a quarterback. So that means does New England stick to 23 and wait? Do they move up? What happens with teams that are thinking, okay, it's quarterback's not a need, but this guy's just too good? Does Miami already taking a quarterback at 5, then they don't need one at 18? It's going to be really interesting with Jordan Love because trying to find a spot for that fourth quarterback is incredibly difficult.
All right, Mel, so good. Outstanding. Thank you, my friend. And we will see you again here tomorrow for sure. Again, that's one of the most intriguing players. What winds up happening with Love is one of the great storylines of the night. But the first, of course, is what winds up happening with Tua Tagovailoa. And as I briefly mentioned, Adam Schefter was with us live earlier this morning here on Get Up. He had this thought on Tua.
Now, one of the scenarios the Dolphins have had to have talked about is do they go and take a really good positional player, an offensive tackle, a defensive lineman? Do they go for somebody like that and then say, we like Jordan Love enough that we're going to go try to get him at 18 or even trade up from 18 up to a higher spot? San Francisco has been openly advertising that it's willing to move its pick at 13. So could the Dolphins do something like that where they think their team is better off? I think of the quarterbacks right now. I wonder if Justin Herbert would be more likely to slip. But again, I don't see either of these quarterbacks sliding out of the top 10. That's me.
Okay, and that's about as good as you're going to get. And so I've got Desmond Howard with me here this morning, as along with RC and Neek. And so, Desmond, I'll start with you. Again, College Game Day every week, and no one has probably watched more Tua than you have. You were the first person who said on Get Up that you liked Burrow ahead of Tua. You said it at a time when no one else was saying it. Now he is clearly going to be the number one pick. So my question to you is, knowing everything that we know and with the data that we have, the medical evaluations we have, are you comfortable taking Tua at number 5 overall if you're on the clock?
Wow, Greeny, that's a tough call. I think because of the injury history of Tua, I'm not comfortable taking him at number 5. In my opinion, if you take a quarterback in the top 10, he should be a plug-and-play guy, a guy who you expect to play in the upcoming season. I don't think you're going to get that with Tua. As a matter of fact, you do not get that with Tua. I don't care what they're trying to sell you out of his camp. And Tua has some struggles, too. People, they don't talk about the struggles that he had while he was at Alabama. Don't forget the Georgia game when he was struggling against the Bulldogs. And then Jalen Hurts had to come in and save the day. That came because they have more film to study. And Neek and RC, they can tell you, once these defensive coordinators get enough film to study, they can find your weaknesses. And then the championship game, don't forget what Clemson did. I think his first pass was a pick 6. He looked bad in that game, too. So he's had some really, really bad moments up there in Tuscaloosa when people are just trying to make it seem like this guy had a flawless career. And he played against behind an outstanding offensive line, Greeny. We're talking about a group that only given up 28 sacks in 2 years, the fewest in the FBS. So As talented as Tua is, there were some weaknesses to his game. They gave up those sacks because he held the ball too long trying to make too many plays. So I don't think I can get him at five because of the injury history and because of some of the big games he struggled in too.
Well, that's what I've been trying to lead to all morning long, is that there are other reasons for some question marks beyond the injury history. And we talked, you just laid it out perfectly, the Georgia game, the Clemson game. He played behind the best offensive line in the country, and he probably had better receivers than half the quarterbacks in the NFL. Last year. So, RC, let me come to you with that. Again, you're an SEC guy through and through. Yeah. You see it every single week. Do you see the same question marks?
Yeah. You know what? There are some of those question marks, but let's go back to those games that Desmond mentioned. That was a hobbled Tua. So if you're part of your evaluation is saying, you know what, we don't believe he'll get the ball out of his hands fast enough to be 100%, so we may get that hobbled football player, then I could see it. But two-leg Tua has crushed folks, and that's what I think what you have to look at. Now, I agree with Adam Schefter in this. Here's the one thing I agree with Schefter on. He says, maybe pick a positional player. If you're the Miami Dolphins and you don't have Justin Herbert graded out as a guy who could start right away, and you feel you're a little nervous about Tua's injury, then just draft a really good player at that position, because you stink. You need players everywhere. Don't talk yourself into a quarterback that you don't really want. But if you believe that Tua Tagovailoa is what I think he is, and if you can convince yourself that he's healthy enough to come back and play this year, I think you have to do it. I've just seen too much greatness. And I also sat and watched the game when Dave Aranda, who's now the Baylor head coach, had a book on Tua, and we couldn't stop him then. And so for me, if this guy is ready to go, I believe you make the pick at five.
Neek, they're at five. They're also at 18, as was mentioned before. Do you believe the Dolphins have to come out of Thursday night with a quarterback?
No, I don't think they have to come out of Thursday night with a quarterback. I think what they've done down there, they're headed in the right direction, and there are other ways to build the team. I think people understand that the easiest way and the most, I guess, secure way to build the team is with a great quarterback, but there aren't that many of them out there. So if they don't think that Tua is going to be healthy, and I think it's fine if he's not healthy in the first season, but if they don't think he's going to be healthy quarterback for them over the long haul, and they want to keep building this team and keep looking for a quarterback, or try to do something like what the 49ers have done. No one is out here thinking Jimmy Garoppolo is the type of guy that you can hand a ball to and all of a sudden your offense is magic. There are teams that can win without having a future Hall of Famer at quarterback. And if you don't think Tua can be healthy enough to become that, then it's fine to not draft him. But the problem I would have is if you think that somehow you can turn one of these other quarterbacks, Love or Herbert, into Tua. If you're walking into this expecting and understanding that those guys will not grow into real, like, game-changing, franchise-changing quarterbacks, and you're going to build a great team around them, I'm fine with that. But don't try to convince us that somehow Jordan Love and Herbert are going to grow into something that is as good or better than what we project Tua to be.
It is always about the quarterbacks when we get down to the bottom line at the draft. And I can't recall a year where there were this many questions about the group that we expect to go in the first round. Meanwhile, we have other questions to answer this morning as well, including one of them, the question that the Bengals are presuming asking themselves every single day. Just how good is Joe Burrow going to be? RC will make a comparison, one the folks in Cincinnati are going to like a lot. And then questions have risen about Justin Herbert's decision-making and leadership abilities. His college coach is here to answer those and more. He'll join me live as we continue to get up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like animal control when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and again, we are just 2 days from the NFL draft, and NFL prospects will hear their names called by Commissioner Roger Goodell as the draft will get underway. And it got us to thinking about who some of these top players remind us of. The coaches hate doing that stuff, but I love it. I love looking at a prospect and saying, yeah, this guy projects to be similar to this or this player. So let's do a few of them here. And Ryan Clark, I'll start with you. Joe Burrow will be the number one pick in this draft. Who does he sort of remind you of?
He reminds me of Tony Romo. And I know people may think, oh, Tony Romo wasn't a guy that was drafted and all of this, but Tony Romo had great escapability. He was great in second play opportunities, which we've seen Joe Burrow do. And he was a guy who was fearless in pushing the ball down the field and throwing into tight windows. And that's exactly what I see with Joe Burrow. He's a tough player. He's a football player that you might not necessarily love the measurables. He's not as tall as Justin Herbert. He doesn't have the Patrick Mahomes arms, but he's accurate. He goes through his progressions and he is able to make plays with some athleticism that I believe is truly underrated.
Okay, that's the first pick in the draft. Dominique, the second pick in the draft we expect will be Chase Young out of Ohio State. Who does he sort of remind you of?
Julius Peppers. I think Chase Young, if he reaches his full potential, he can be close to or maybe even better than Julius Peppers because they both are edge rushers who can do everything, are outstanding athletes, phenomenally explosive. And when you walk up to them, you get a little nervous because they are that scary of a player. And I think that there's another little tidbit that's interesting is Jack Del Rio was Julius Peppers' defensive coordinator when he first entered the league. And if Chase Young goes to Washington as we expect, he'll end up with Jack Del Rio again. And I'm sure he will find every bit of old tape that he had of Julius Peppers and find all those old plays and reinstall them for Chase Young and cut him loose on opposing quarterbacks.
It's a really good call. I don't know that people remember as much as they should just how good a player Julius Peppers was. RC, let's talk about Tua. Who does he remind you of?
Drew Brees. And I know this has been said a lot of times, and I think when you mention somebody like Drew Brees, who's an all-time great, a first ballot Hall of Famer, people are kind of taken aback. But when you watch Tua go through his progressions and also the accuracy in which he threw the ball, whether it was to Judy, Smith, Ruggs, Waddle, those guys always had the opportunities to catch the ball and be ready for run after the catch. That is so important in this league that wants to spread you out. Now, when you have a quarterback that understands his progressions and knows exactly where to get the ball to his wide receivers in the best possible spot, you have a guy like Drew Brees who you can build an offense around.
Okay, yeah. So now you understand why someone might go third in the draft or as high as that, despite all the injury concerns, if that's the comparable on him. For both of you guys, RC, I'll start with you. Jeff Okuda projected to go third. He's the corner out of Ohio State. Who does he remind you of?
Yeah. He reminds me of Byron Jones, and I know this is probably not the sexy guy to compare him to. You want to hear Jalen Ramsey and all of these guys, but he's long like Byron Jones. He's a guy who's explosive when you look at the verticals and the broads and the 40, but he also didn't necessarily get the ball as much as you would like. Byron Jones in 5 years has 2 picks. Jeff Okuda didn't get his 3 career interceptions until this last year, but they're both long, press, lockdown corners, and being compared to Byron Jones ain't a bad thing. He is the highest paid guy in the league.
Nick, who do you see?
Oh, yeah. I like Stephon Gilmore. I think that Stephon Gilmore is more accomplished man corner than Byron Jones, and that's why I think Okuda will kind of transition. He can do man or zone, but I think Okuda in the league will be a guy who can play man, and that's what I see when I see Gilmore. I love Okuda. He's probably the best corner I've seen in recent years coming out of the draft, most complete at least.
Okay, so this again is a field of you guys' immediate expertise. And then finally, maybe the most versatile defensive player in this draft is Isaiah Simmons. Dominique Foxworth, who does he remind you of?
I mean, it's hard to pick one guy. I love Darius Leonard because they're both explosive, but I think Derwin James because he can play so many different positions. And Derwin James is a safety, and you may think Isaiah Simmons, but he's a linebacker. No, Isaiah Simmons, as Ryan Clark told me yesterday, he's a football player, and that's the same thing as Derwin James. Isaiah Simmons played more than 100 snaps at safety, outside rusher, even slot corner, and he's listed as a linebacker. He won the award for the best linebacker in the country, so I have to compare him to a safety because that man ran a 4-3. Linebackers don't run 4-3s. He's a special player. I hope that whoever gets him understands how unique he is and they can allow his flexibility to improve the rest of the players on their defense.
RC, who's he remind you of?
The last Terminator in Terminator Dark Fate, the one that could separate his body and he walk around and like he's the actual Terminator walking here, and then his insides, which are metal, are driving the truck that he just jumped out of the front of the truck and threw a freaking javelin at the lady that was trying to save Sarah Connor and them. The dude, there's nobody like him. I'm just going to be honest. And Dominique did a great job of trying to describe this dude, but that's why it was so hard, because he does have those Derwin James type skills and measurables, but then he plays linebacker. He can do things that Darius Leonard does. And these are two dudes who are all pros. And when your comparison is he's a lot like this dude and a lot like that dude, that means he's not the Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator. He's this new joint that I don't even know how Arnold came back and killed. And so when you have a guy like that, you just draft him. Stop worrying about where he's going to play. He going to play football. He going to play defense. And he's going to play it well.
Okay, no question about it. He is now my number one overall pick in my mock draft. As we continue here, we've got much more coming on Get Up. And then First Take will follow us here this morning, as always. That'll be followed by SportsCenter and then NFL Live at 3 o'clock. Rachel Nichols in the Jump. Then it's our annual NFL Nation mock draft. SportsCenter's got a 5:30 start tonight. The PTI guys will be along at 6. And we'll cap off another day with another SportsCenter with SVP at 11 Eastern. That's after we show you the decisive Game 5 of the 1995 ALDS Yankees-Mariners. It was a classic finish. Full day here on ESPN. Coming up, he might be the most dangerous pick in the NFL draft. One person close to Justin Herbert says the team that picks him is going to get a star. And he'll tell us why when he joins us live. Next, Get Up. ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
All right, we're just 2 days away from the start of the NFL draft, where all these questions will be answered. One of them, will Tua Tagovailoa fall in the draft, perhaps behind Oregon's Justin Herbert? Mel Kiper Jr. is projecting just that. He sees Herbert going 5 to the Dolphins over Tua in his most recent mock draft. So let's talk about that with Laura Rutledge here. Laura, it seems Herbert obviously has all the physical traits that scouts around the league are looking for in a quarterback.
Yeah, and look, when you talk to Justin Herbert, you could see why he might have started to win over these NFL teams. He's somebody that makes you feel like you could invest in, and maybe he just might be a Renaissance man.
Let's go back in time. A few centuries, shall we? The Renaissance called, and they'd like to sculpt a quarterback. Hello, Michelangelo. Make him look like Justin Herbert. At the Combine, Herbert measured at 6'6", 236 pounds, with 10-inch hands. Ideal size for the NFL level. He has ideal experience, too, with 42 career starts, tied for second most since 2016. Beyond additional game reps, Herbert's decision to return to Oregon for his senior season paid off statistically. He's shown in the vertical passing game with 15 touchdowns, 0 interceptions on go routes in 2019, holding the second best touchdown to interception ratio in the FBS. Still, there are some cracks in this marble.
I'd be scared to death to draft him early. Skittish in the pocket, misses throws.
Herbert had a 16.3 QBR out of 100 when pressured in 2019. And in an NFL that celebrates improvisation at the quarterback position, think Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, Herbert's QBR outside the pocket is only 37.3. When under pressure and outside the pocket, he completed just 35.5% of his passes. So if your franchise rests on the shoulders of this young quarterback, the finest material only goes so far. When it comes to Herbert, the sculptor in charge must mold him well. If you're set up to cultivate potential, a masterpiece awaits.
So when it comes to being truly well-rounded and being a Renaissance man, another thing to add in there, Justin Herbert won the Campbell Trophy, which is the academic Heisman presented to the best in college football for academic and athletic excellence.
Greeny. Yeah, he's done everything right since the season ended as well. Laura, outstanding. Thank you. We'll see you in a half hour. Laura's hosting First Take today with Stephen A. and Max, so we look forward to that. Meanwhile, let's now bring into the conversation someone who knows Justin Herbert as well as anyone, and that is his college head coach, who's good enough to get up early with us here this morning from Oregon. It's Mario Cristobal. Coach, thank you very much for doing that. And, you know, I noticed as I was going over things that Justin's first ever Instagram post includes a picture of the two of you hugging. What can you tell us about that relationship that you have with the quarterback?
Well, when you look at Justin, not only as a quarterback, as a player, as a person, the best way to describe him, he's exactly what you want your son to be. And by that, I mean he's an incredible human being, a relentless competitor. Everything he does to the best of his ability, and there's not a selfish bone in his body. He wants to do things for the good of others. He wants to see his teammates win, those around him get better. This guy is a really impactful human being and football player. And again, I said it time and time again, he's the best I've ever been around.
So he isn't going to be the first quarterback in this draft. At least that's not what we expect. He will either be second or third, according to all of the projections. In your mind, any team that passes on him, what will they be missing out on?
Well, as a football coach, what do you want out of your quarterback, right? You want a field general. You want an off-the-field leader. You want a guy that's always demand the most of himself and his teammates. And if you're in a certain stage in your franchises, I guess, you know, situation, you want a guy to lead your franchise to championships. And here's a guy that came in as a freshman, thrown right to the Wolves, and took over a 4-8 football team. And 3 years later, he's sitting on a conference championship and sits there as a Rose Bowl champion with the Campbell Trophy in hand. And, you know, his one deficit, I think he had a B one time in his entire academic career. Aside from that, the guy has done everything and more than you could ever ask for a quarterback.
Let's talk about the personality, because I have heard people describe him as introverted, and I saw that you said it was, quote, laughable to describe him as such. How would you describe his personality?
Well, yeah, I do think that a comment like that is laughable, because, you know, I didn't see any of these people at any of our practices, certainly didn't see him on the sideline of any of our football games. Justin's an outgoing guy and is a tremendous leader, and he is vocal how he needs to be, when he needs to do it, and he's very impactful and effective. This guy, it's like those old E.F. Hutton commercials, man. When Justin talks, people listen. That's what he is, man. When he opens up his mouth and he says something, it's got some pow, you know, some wow factor to it. So I could not say that I've ever been around a better guy. And he's just scratching the surface. He's just starting to get going.
Well, one more quick thought on him, because if there are questions that I've heard raised by our analysts, it is that with all of the extraordinary physical traits that we just broke down, sometimes the tape and the decision-making doesn't always match. Is that reasonable criticism in your mind?
I really don't think so. I think, if anything, we could have done a better job as a coaching staff at certain times in setting him up for success. I think he did exactly what he was told to do. I think his supporting cast certainly did the best they could do as well, and he had a really good season. We play some good football teams, and, you know, sometimes other teams are going to make plays, but overall, if you look at his career, the things that he did, throws he made, times he tucked the ball away and ran, critical situations, having to come with big plays in loud stadiums and hostile environments, this guy came through and came through in a big time way.
Yeah, it's a shame you won't be able to be with him on Thursday night, as this is obviously such a unique circumstance, but it will be a huge night for him, for you, and for the program. Speaking of that, I would like to ask you a little bit about it. How is your program and you personally handling all of the uncertainty that right now surrounds the start of the 2020 season?
Yeah, we're living in a Zoom world right now, and it's kind of interesting the way that we're getting with each other online and, you know, having our meetings, checking on guys academically, making sure they're taking care of their business, and sending huge boxes of protein and bands and workout tools, whatever we can to help our guys manage their lives and their academic and, you know, athletic and fitness situations during this time is what we do. And we try to keep it very fresh for them as well. We try to have guest speakers in there all the time. Yesterday, Eric Armstead popped in there and addressed the team. LaMichael James popped into the running back meeting room and address them for a little bit. So, you know what, we understand this is a difficult time for everybody and challenging, but at the same time, we're not going to make any excuses. We're going to do all we can to do the best we can, because once this lifts, we're going to be ready to roll.
Yeah, we all want to see football as soon as is possible, but there are certain things that are beyond our control. So I wonder about two of them in particular. What would be your view on the possibility of conducting part or even an entire college football season without fans in the stands?
you know, until I get my qualifications and as a scientist and, you know, someone that can understand exactly what's going on, I don't want to venture into that world of the what ifs. We have drawn up a bunch of different scenarios regarding if this happens, if it's pushed back, if there's a delay. And everyone has all laid out. I think the NCAA has done a good job communicating with the athletic directors, the administrations, and the coaches to have a contingency plan for just about everything. But, you know, instead of trying to speculate, I don't even try. I don't want to get myself in a pinch and then I realize that, hey, I really don't know what the heck I'm talking about when it comes to stuff like that. But we do have a plan, and the players are enthused, and everyone is doing a really good job just respecting this virus. Because if we do respect it, you know, brighter days are coming faster than what we think.
Now, of course, we all hope so. One of the other things that has come up, and I would like to ask you, though, is the notion that if the season will get pushed back significantly, it is so important to play for so many different reasons that maybe a season could even be played as late as in the spring. What would be your thoughts on the possibility of playing a college football season as late as that?
You know, I haven't thought about it as it didn't push back to that extent. I'm all for playing whenever you play. And you got to realize I'm from an era where, I mean, you had a job all summer. You probably sold encyclopedias and worked construction. And then on conditioning day, you show up at 2 o'clock, put on your shorts and your cleats, go out there and run your 16 110s and get ready to go to camp. So we're always in ready mode. That's the mentality that I've always had. And certainly, you know, our players are subjected to different kind of conditioning tests, but there has to be a grace period to get guys physically fit and ready to roll, because at the end of the day, the safety part is always has to be at the forefront. We understand that. Medical team understands that. Everybody's on board to make sure we take care of our players first.
Now, Coach, I've really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for doing this again. Congratulations. I know it'll be a great night for you and the program on Thursday, wherever it winds up for Justin. And I hope we can do this again. Stay safe.
Okay, appreciate it. Have a good one.
Take care. It's Mario Cristobal, the head coach at Oregon. And again, he'll be watching Thursday night with the NFL draft. And every pick, once again, will be live on ESPN with all our usual expert analysis. It'll also be available on NFL Network. And ABC's coverage will focus on the prospect's journey to the draft. Our first round coverage begins Thursday night, 8 Eastern, with all 3 days also live on ESPN Deportes, ESPN Radio, and the ESPN app. Coming up, Ryan Clark heard his buddy Marcus Spears say something about that guy yesterday. RC says Swagoo needs to make amends. Very specific amends. You'll hear how coming up. Get up, ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We are back on Get Up, and we're talking about the All-In Challenge. If you love sports and you would like to help people in desperate need during this time, they have a variety of ways for you to do it. The items and experiences that you can try and win would include a night with wrestling legend Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, offering you and a guest first-class flights to the next WrestleMania destination and tickets. How about Pro Football Hall of Fame President and CEO David Baker, offering you and one guest the ultimate VIP experience at the 2020 or 2021 Hall of Fame game weekend. Tom Brady, you and three friends can go to the Buccaneers home opener. You'll have a private dinner or private workout with Brady himself. You'll even get to take home his first game-used uniform and cleats. Just remarkable opportunities, and we are pleased to welcome two guys who've now teamed up together to provide one wonderful experience for some sports fan out there, and that is Bubba Watson and Denny Hamlin. Guys, thank you both so much for doing this. Bubba, what is the offering that you guys are putting out there for the All-In Challenge?
Well, Denny's such a great golfer. He wanted to give a round of golf for everybody, and he asked me to be a part of it, and I said, hey, play Michael Jordan's golf course, Grove 23. I said, I'm in for sure. And then what could I offer? Ping said they'd give out two sets of custom clubs for the winners. And then also I said, let's throw in a watch. So it's called the RM901, the Aviator. And it's one of my watches from my collection. And so I think it's awesome that we're going to throw that out there. And try to raise some money for a good, great cause.
And that's at Michael Jordan's new course, so that should be spectacular. Again, a wonderful offering for anyone who loves golf or auto racing and spend the day with you guys. Now let's get into the meat of this here, because, Denny, you caddied for Bubba at the par 3 contest in 2012, and he went on to win the Masters. So I assume that you take most, if not all, of the credit for that victory.
Yeah, a little bit. I remember watching the 2012 Masters with my friends that weekend. And, I mean, when he was in the woods there, and we got to talk about it a little bit earlier, but I watched him on the range. He would pick a target, and he would hit a hook, he would hit a slice, and he would hit a straight one. And then he moved to a new target, and he would hit a hook, a slice, and a straight one. I was like, he's got this shot. Like, I've watched – he practices this. So it was amazing to see it all play out. And, yeah, that was a great experience to do that.
Now, Bubba, you got to be like the least superstitious person in the world, because if it was me, I would have him on my bag at the par 3 every year at Augusta, considering it worked so well that time.
You know, ever since he started winning these big races, he just kind of threw me out. He just dropped me. And so I don't get to call him anymore and ask him what's the caddy.
Okay. Which of you guys would do better if you? I love asking this. If you were to swap sports, so Denny, if you went out on the golf on the PGA Tour and tried to play with those guys, or Bubba, you got in the car and tried to race with those guys, Denny, which one of you guys would fare better?
I would. There's no question.
Bubba, you agree?
No. So out of respect for the other drivers, I can make a left turn, right? You have a guy in your ear telling you to come in and change your tires. You have all that stuff. Teddy, all he does is he just gives me the yardage. So it's so much easier on driving a race car,
also,
I'm pretty sure.
He's also your punching bag. That's not fair.
I've had the headset on with you. I've heard some of the stuff that you say to your crew. So I've heard it.
I think everyone is getting a sense that a day of golf with these two guys will be a lot of fun. Now, Denny, my staff came across some video of you driving toy cars with your daughters during this time of quarantine. Is that what you are doing to help you stay ready for when racing resumes?
It's all we got. I mean, you know, I always tell my kids if they can't be entertained here, then they got some really major issues. So, yeah, you're seeing where she said the floor is lava there. I'm not allowed to touch the floor. So I have to get all the way to my race car. So she just creates these obstacle courses for me. And then here I'm taking out my youngest daughter, figuring out my takeout moves when I finally get back to the racetrack. So one thing we're going to say is no doubt.
Yeah.
We're both going to finish last in each other's respective sports, no matter what.
That's probably a reasonable assumption to make. Hey, really quickly, Bubba, while I have you here, you play my favorite sport, and I know how much I miss watching you guys out there every weekend. And I just wonder, as you have been sidelined through this, like, what thoughts have you had on the role that sports plays in our society that maybe have changed as a result of all of it shutting down for this period of time?
The one thing that the aspect that I see is the part that no matter what you believe in politics wise, sports brings us all together. We all pull for the same team. We all pull for those special moments. And we miss that. Everybody misses that right now. Whatever that sport is, we're all missing it. We all want to see the highlights on ESPN SportsCenter. And obviously we want to hear y'all get up and talk about them and make fun of people. And that's what we all want to see. And we want to see the flip outs at NASCAR. We want to see Denny Hamlin throwing his helmet and everything.
We want to see you guys back out there as soon as possible. But again, in the interim, it's a wonderful thing that you are offering here for the All-In Challenge, a day of golf at Michael Jordan's new course, which is supposed to be off the charts, with Bubba Watson and Denny Hamlin. Guys, to both of you, thank you for doing this. Please stay safe, and I hope we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
All right, that's terrific. All right, guys. Thank you very much, guys. Coming up on First Take, they're a little more than 10 minutes away. Kevin Durant no longer playing in the Bay Area, still casting a tall shadow. Draymond throwing shade. What did he say? Is he right? Stephen A., Max, and Laura Rutledge on First Take in just a few here on ESPN.
The NFL draft is now officially open.
Thursday night, he'll be announcing draft picks from his basement. Wednesday morning, Roger Goodell will join us live to discuss the unprecedented virtual NFL draft and the uncertainty of the upcoming season. Don't miss The Commissioner of the NFL, Wednesday morning, 8:30 Eastern on ESPN. Meanwhile, at what point in the night will he call the name of Tua Tagovailoa? That seems to be the big question. And if he reads some of the tea leaves, it feels like right now he might be the guy who slides down the draft board this year and is available later than we have genuinely been expecting. And, you know, if he is, as Max Kellerman joins me here, First Take is just a few minutes away, it certainly happened many times before. Aaron Rodgers fell down the draft board. Brady Quinn fell further than we thought. Dan Marino fell farther than we thought. Give us all a sneak preview. If Tua winds up being the guy who falls, let's say into the teens somewhere in the draft on Thursday night, what will be your first comment on Friday morning?
I'd be very surprised. I'd even say shocked, because even though you have the health issues, Mike, we've seen in recent years, because of the, look, they protect the quarterback more than ever. All the rules changes have favored the quarterback, even compared to drafts not all that long ago, 10, 12 years ago. And so what do we see? Quarterbacks being taken high up in the draft in spite of issues. Look, Baker Mayfield, forget about the fact that he went ahead of Sam Darnold. Early on in the process, people, well, he's not really NFL-style quarterback, because people still had kind of outdated views of what that was, not spread offense as much, even though it's very much in the NFL. He went first overall. And quarterback, I thought when Tua originally got hurt, I thought, ooh, watch this. He'll wind up falling to the Patriots at the end of the first round. I would be very surprised if he was even there in the middle of the first round. If you need a quarterback, there's one issue with him. His health. Do you think he'll hold up? And if you think yes, if he checks out and he's ahead of schedule now, at least according, you know, when you first heard the injury, like, uh-oh, you didn't think he'd be ready to go to start the season, I'd be very surprised if they passed up on him.
It would be very Patriot-like, though, wouldn't it? Our friend Peter King projected him in his mock draft to go 13 and New England to trade up to get him. That would be very Belichickian, wouldn't it?
If the Patriots wind up with Tua, I mean, come on. It's ridiculous at a certain point. And people are talking about the Wonderlic being low, but it wasn't, like, obscenely low. And the more NFL players talk about it, the more it seems it completely doesn't matter. No one takes it seriously. Peyton Manning, I talked about it yesterday, scored, like, mid-high 20s, not, like, much better. So, like, what is the only red flag is the health. Otherwise, this is the guy you want, maybe even ahead of Burrow.
All right, Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Laura's working with them today, and they are 3 minutes away from First Take. Max, thank you very much. We'll see you there in just a few minutes. We'll finish up, meanwhile, with this, because we got to settle up some business here. We hope that everyone enjoyed the first two episodes of Last Dance, which aired on Sunday night on ESPN, and episodes 3 and 4 are coming your way this coming Sunday. And I can tell you that 4 is the best one so far. 4 is epic. Ryan Clark, meanwhile, had some problems with some of the things that Marcus Spears said on our show yesterday. He tweeted, "My friend, my brother, my round. M. Spears, Marcus Spears said something on Get Up that hurt me. The disrespect showed to the one shoe goat was hard to hear. This can only be forgiven if he throws some of them small chickens on the green egg and offers them as an olive branch. MJ is the goat." Well, Swagoo has replied. This is what Swagoo tweeted. "Done deal. LOL, I'm still not changing, though." So I guess, RC, he is offering to cook you chickens on that egg thing that he's always got in his backyard that I see on Instagram all the time. But he's not backing down on his stance that LeBron is the greatest ever.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know how you sit back and you watch MJ and you see what type of competitor it was. You see how much he wanted it. Put me in for the most important 14 minutes. You pull him out. He's mad. And then Paxton has to get him to the playoffs. And Larry Bird. See, kids these days don't know. And Marcus is a kid. Marcus was a freshman when I was a senior. They don't know about Larry Bird, right? Larry Bird was the type of dude that he might come to the gym and you might not pick him. But after the game, you're going to make sure he's the first pick on your team the next game. He called that man God, not a God, not a basketball God, the God. And that's the type of feeling that Michael Jordan gave you. And so I don't know, man. Like, I don't, maybe Marcus is still a Tiger. Maybe he's not. I'm not sure.
I'm not going to jump on Marcus's side necessarily, but in his defense, LeBron's pretty good. I mean, it's not like he's bad. That guy can play basketball too.
Dom, I think LeBron is an all-time great. They had the Mount Rushmore conversation yesterday, and I believe that LeBron James belongs on it. That's not a bad deal, right? Like, you can be picked second and still be very rich and very successful, but you ain't first. Right. Michael Jordan is first. Like, it's not close, bro. Like, we still wearing his shoes. Kids go pay like post retail for his shoes and they ain't never seen him play. The Last Dance just came out. Ain't nobody going to be buying LeBron's 20 years from now. Marcus talking about we going to tell the same stories. No, we ain't, because you got to tell stories about how he lost in the finals. We don't tell them stories about Mike.
I want to hear more of this, so RC, I'll call you from the car on the way home. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.